You know, there's a lot of rules that God gave us in the Bible. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, he told people that they couldn't marry their brothers and sisters. That's where we actually get those statutes that are with us today. And we know the reason for that is so that we don't have deformities and things like that. When he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, he gave them rules like, remember, he had 1 million people living in a camp in tents there in the desert. And he talked to them and he told them that when they used the bathroom, they needed to go outside of the camp a certain distance, and that they were to cover up their product with sand. And he gave us all kinds of different rules in the Bible for the people to adhere to. And the rules that he gave the people were rules to help them be more healthy, help them have clearness of mind. He told his people that they would be a special and peculiar people to him. And the word peculiar we think of today as maybe a little bit strange or something, but peculiar means special, set apart is what it really meant. And so as we go back through the Bible, there are many rules there in the Bible that God gave his people to live by. And tonight we were going to study about some of those rules. As we begin tonight, I thought it would be nice to read from the book of Nehemiah. Remember, Nehemiah is one of the people who was looking, the Jewish people had all been carried away to the kingdom of Babylon, and they had been slaves there for a long time. And they wanted to go home very badly. And Nehemiah, his prayer is recorded here. And in the first chapter of Nehemiah is where this is found. Says, chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, the words of Nehemiah the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month of Chislu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace. Nehemiah actually had a great job. He worked for the king. He worked there in the palace. That Hananiah, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah. They had come back from Nehemiah's land. Some of the Jews had been allowed to go home. And I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. When these men came back, Nehemiah wanted to know what was going on at home in their homeland. And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. So he was wondering how things were going for their rebuilding effort. The king of Babylon had let them go home, but they told him it wasn't well at all. So verse 4, Nehemiah says, and it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven and said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and terrible God that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. This is an interesting verse because this tells us what Nehemiah and the Jewish people's perspective was of their continued blessings that would come from God. And Nehemiah says that he knows that God keepeth the covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. See, if we go all the way back to heaven with Satan in the beginning, Satan was unwilling to obey God and keep his commandments. And therefore he was cast down, the Bible says, and he's continuing his rebellion here on earth. And as we, if you study your Old Testament, you'll learn that the Jewish people were brought out of Egypt with great power, and God gave them all kinds of blessings, and he took them into their new land, and he told them, as long as you obey me and do what I've asked you to do, I will take care of you, and your enemies will never overcome you, and you'll become the greatest nation on earth, and nobody will be able to bother you because you'll be my people. And his plan was he was going to bless them so much that everyone else would want to join them in the worship of the true God, and they would all join in that religion. We don't have to be a Jew to worship the Creator. And so Nehemiah realized what had happened to his people, and he talks about that God keeps the covenant for them that love him and observe his commandments. And then he says in verse 6, he's praying, Let thine ear now be attentive and thy eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now day and night, for the children of Israel thy servants, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. So Nehemiah began to pray for forgiveness for his people. In verse 7, he says, "We have dealt very corruptly against thee, O God, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses." He told them they had not obeyed God. Verse 8, "Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying," and he quotes what God told Moses to tell them, "If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations." He told them if they didn't obey him, he would have to destroy their nation, and they'd be spread all over the nations among the world. But he told them in verse 9, "But if ye turn unto me and keep my commandments and do them, though there were of you cast out unto the uttermost part of the heaven, yet will I gather them from thence, and will bring them unto the place that I have chosen to set my name. Now these are thy servants and thy people, whom thou hast redeemed by thy great power and by thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, and to the prayer of thy servants who desire to fear thy name. And prosper, I pray thee, thy servants this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. For I was the king's cupbearer." This was actually the man that gave the king his cup to drink. And he actually was able to eventually ask for his people to be able to go home, and the king gave them all kinds of blessings to send them home. But he points out clearly that there are things that had happened to him because they didn't obey God. And we live on a planet today where, you know, God is not obeyed. He's mocked, and a lot of people don't even want to believe he exists. Let's turn back now to the book of Exodus, chapter 40. We'll read just the last few verses here. This is as they finished building the temple, the little tabernacle that they took with them in the wilderness. God told them if they would do these things, he would dwell with them. And in verse 33 of Exodus 40 it says, "And he," this is Moses, "reared up the court round about, and the tabernacle and the altar, and set up the hanging of the court gate. So Moses finished the work. Then a cloud covered the tent of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. So Moses was not able to enter into the tent of the congregation, because the cloud abode thereon, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And when the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the children of Israel went onward in all their journeys. But if the cloud were not taken up, then they journeyed not till the day that it was taken up. For the cloud of the Lord was upon the tabernacle by day, and fire was on it by night, in the sight of all the house of Israel throughout all their journeys." Can you imagine what that would have been like to have been come out of Egypt with his people, and they were dwelling in the desert where it freezes at night? You'd literally freeze to death out there. There's not enough wood to gather and things to have fires. And God dwelt with them, and his cloud was there during the day. It was 120 degrees in the daytime. And he gave them a cloud over them all day long and took care of them in the evening. The cloud turned into fire, and he kept them warm at night. And he took them 40 years through the wilderness like this. He did amazing things for them. And he told them a lot of things that he expected them to do. See, if the Ten Commandments really only have 10 rules. For instance, if you have the Ten Commandments and you don't keep the rest of God's laws that he gave, there's nothing in the Ten Commandments, say, that would preclude homosexuality. That's given in God's other statutes. And all these other things are part of the rules God gave. And God says, and before we begin reading here, we should read one last thing, and that's Malachi chapter 3. That's just before the New Testament, last book of the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 6. God says, "For I am the Lord, I change not." It's quite a thought. God says he never changes. See, if something's perfect and God says that he is perfect, we don't change something. You know, we have a patent office because if you think of a better idea, you can patent it. But if you had the perfect idea from the beginning, there would be no reason to ever change it. So God has said that everything he has done is perfect and that he never changes his things. He sometimes has to work with us, but he never changes his rules. So now as we begin to read what we came to study tonight, let's turn to Leviticus chapter 11. This is the chapter in the Bible that deals with the foods that we should eat and the foods that we should not eat. And Kenny was asking about this last Sabbath, and he's asked me several times about it, so I decided tonight that we would read through these verses and gain a better understanding of what God has had to say about this. Leviticus chapter 11 says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying unto them, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, These are the beasts which ye shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth." So God told him he was going to tell them what they could eat and what they could not. Now some people have seen these laws as dealing specifically with the Jews, and they say, oh, well, that was just for the Jews. But we have to ask ourselves a question: what would the death of Jesus have to do with making an animal that God said was an unclean animal clean? Jesus didn't die to make animals clean, he died to forgive our sins. An interesting verse as we're beginning to consider this, if you'll turn back to the book of Genesis with me, to the time of the flood, when Noah was told to take the animals into the ark. See, this is hundreds and hundreds of years before Abraham, so there were no Jews on the earth yet. This was before to the flood, and God prepared to send them into the ark. And it's located in Genesis chapter 7, beginning in verse 1. It says, "And the Lord said unto Noah," like I say, this is hundreds of years before Abraham, the father of the Jews, ever came along, and I don't know how many hundred years, but many hundred years before the Jews came out of Egypt and God gave them the laws that he gave them. This is what God said, Genesis 7:1. "The Lord said unto Noah, Come thou and all thy house into the ark, for I have seen thee righteous before me in this generation." Verse 2 says, "Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens." They were to take seven of every clean beast into the ark, the male and his female, and of beasts that are not clean, by two, the male and his female. See, this was because before the flood, they actually didn't eat animals. But after the flood, God destroyed all the vegetation, and when they came out of the ark, there was a period of time before the trees grew back and all these things happened, and he began to let them eat the flesh of animals at that time. And he told them they should take seven pairs of clean animals into the ark, but only two of the unclean. That's because when they came off the ark, they weren't going to eat any of the unclean, because if they had killed one of them to eat, they wouldn't have repopulated. There wouldn't have been any more of them. So this concept of clean and unclean animals goes all the way back to the flood. We have it recorded before the flood. You know, hundreds and hundreds of years before there was ever a Jew. See, the fact of the matter is that God made certain animals to clean up the earth. It's kind of like the vulture today. Not too many of us would probably eat a vulture. You know, I guess maybe there might be people that would, but I think they would be few and far between, because the vulture is an animal who's made to clean up things. That's his primary job here on earth, is to clean up dead carcasses. And I'm glad we have them, because I see them on the road there and near my house, and they get to smelling pretty bad, and I'm always happy when I see three or four vultures out there cleaning them up and getting it out of there. You know, it's a good thing, and God made those for that job. So as we return to Leviticus chapter 11 now, verse 1, we'll read it one more time. It says, "The Lord spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying unto them, Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, These are the beasts which ye shall eat among all the beasts that are on the earth." So he told them, I'm going to tell you what you can eat. Verse 3, he says, "Whatsoever parteth the hoof," split hoof, like a cow, "and is cloven-footed, and cheweth the cud, among the beasts that ye shall eat." So he told them, everything that has a cloven foot and chews its cud are the animals that you can eat. Nevertheless, these shall ye not eat of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof. As the camel, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof. So God told them they weren't to eat the camels. They had 50%, they chew their cud, but they didn't have the split hoof, so he told them, I don't want you to eat the camels. He is unclean unto you. And the coney, and the coney, of course, is a type of, they call it a rock rabbit. I don't know whether that's similar to a jackrabbit or something, but that's the definition they gave. We looked that up because I wasn't sure what a coney was when I ran across that. The coney, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the hare, of course, is the rabbit, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the swine, which is the pig, though he divide the hoof and be cloven footed, yet he cheweth not the cud, he is unclean unto you. Of course, the pig is probably the most hotly contested animal today, you know, of now people that live in the country probably eat a lot of rabbits and things, but as far as people that live in the city, they don't really have the opportunity to go out and get rabbits and all that kind of stuff, so they don't think as much of it. But if you study the pig, when I was a little boy, I remember we had a neighbor man who got what's called trichinosis. He ate some swine's flesh that he hadn't cooked hot enough, and it has the little worms in there. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. And he got those in his knee, and he had a knee on him that was just huge, and he eventually died of that. You know, we don't have things like that in, like, the cows, although now we haven't had cow disease and things, but that's come about because of the abuse of the, you know, trying to feed cows cows. God never intended for them to eat each other, so we have those things there. But it used to be we really didn't have any problems amongst the cattle, the sheep, the goats, the things that God had told the people that they could eat. Verse 8, he continues on, he says, of their flesh shall ye not eat, and their carcass shall ye not touch. They are unclean unto you. And I don't know if you've ever been out to a feedlot. I grew up on the farm. If you run cattle in close proximity to each other, they tend to have quite a odor to them. But there's just something about a hog lot that there's almost nothing like it on earth, you know. And if you consider how the pig lives, you know, a cow will not go eat another animal's manure, but the pig is over there, you know, he's ripping through the cow manure and all this kind of stuff, so he's actually taking in all this waste product, and so his body is really not clean. He has a lot of disease and problems with him. He was made to clean up things. Now, so those were the rules he gave them as far as the animals they could eat, as far as we would think of as large animals like mammals. Then he moved on to what was in the water to tell the people what they could eat. Verse 9, he says, these shall ye eat of all that are in the waters. Whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, them shall ye eat. It's very interesting. I understand that the United States military has adopted this very thing to tell their soldiers if they're lost and they have to find food lost at sea or wherever, that this is the rule that they should use, because there are so many poisonous things out there to eat and things that will make you sick, that they actually have this in their manuals to tell them to look for scales and fins on the things that they would try to eat. Verse 10 continues, and it says, all that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, of all that move in the waters, and of any living thing that is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. They shall be even an abomination unto you. Ye shall not eat of their flesh, but ye shall have their carcasses in abomination. In other words, consider them dirty, he's saying, or unclean unto you. Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you. Now, we have all kinds of fish today, then, that fit the clean thing. In fact, most fish that we would catch around here would be considered a clean animal. Of course, the catfish is a fish that is considered a delicacy today, but it does fall in the unclean category, because catfish do not have scales. They have skin instead. But if you've ever considered a catfish and watched how they live and stuff, They're, once again, a bottom feeder. They clean up everything on the bottom of the river, the dead things and all that. Verse 13 continues, and these are they which ye shall have an abomination among the fowls. So then he went to the birds to tell them next. They shall not be eaten. They are an abomination. He begins with the eagle. The second one he speaks of is the ossifrage, which is another type of eagle. The osprey is known as the sea eagle. I'm not sure what some of these birds are, actually. Verse 14 says, and the vulture and the kite, or it's a type of hawk, after his kind, every raven after his kind, the owl and the night hawk, the cuckoo and the hawk after his kind, and the little owl and the cormorant and the great owl, and the swan. And when you look up the word swan, the meaning it gives for it, they call it the water hen. All your ducks and that type of thing fall in that category. The pelican and the gear eagle. The gear eagle is actually a type of another type of vulture. And the stork and the heron after her kind, and the lapwing and the bat. All fowls that creep going upon all fours shall be an abomination unto you. Yet these may ye eat of every flying, creeping thing that goeth upon all four, which have legs above their feet, to leap withal upon the earth. Even these of them ye may eat, the locust after his kind. The locust is, of course, you know, like a type of insect. The bald locust after his kind, and the beetle after his kind, and the grasshopper after his kind. So I wouldn't want to eat grasshoppers, but God told them if they were in a pinch, they could eat a grasshopper. I guess a grasshopper, if you think about it, is eating grass and things like that, so he's probably eating fairly clean objects. So he's probably, although it's a disgusting thought, I suppose you could live on that apparently. Verse 23, but all other flying, creeping things which have 4 feet shall be an abomination unto you. And for these ye shall be unclean. Whosoever touches the carcass of them shall be unclean until the evening, or the end of the day, like nightfall. Whosoever beareth aught of the carcass of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. The carcasses of every beast which divideth the hoof and is not, which divideth the hoof and is not cloven-footed, nor cheweth the cud, are unclean unto you. Everyone that toucheth them shall be unclean. And whatsoever goeth upon his paws, after all manner of beasts that go on all fours, those are unclean unto you. Whoso toucheth their carcass shall be unclean unto the evening. So when it talks about animals with paws, it's talking about like cats, dogs, all those things, which we don't really eat in our country, but there are countries that eat a lot of dogs and that type of thing. Let's see. Verse 29, I think, is where we're at. It says, these also shall be unclean unto you among the creeping things that creep upon the earth, the weasel, the mouse, and the tortoise, or the turtle, after his kind. So mice are unclean. We don't really eat mice over here, but there are countries, if you've ever studied, that mice are a great delicacy. They take the little babies when they're first born, and they dip them in chocolate before they have any fur on them, and they have these little chocolate-covered mice. They're considered a great delicacy, so that in your Oriental countries, the mouse is a big is a big delicacy. Let's see. Verse 30 says, and the ferret, and the chameleon, which of course is the lizard, and the lizard, it says, and the snail, and the mole, these are unclean to you among all that creep. Whosoever doth touch them when they be dead shall be unclean until the evening. And upon whatsoever any of them when they are dead doth fall, it shall be unclean, whether it be in a vessel of wood or raiment, that's clothing, or skin or sack, whatsoever vessel it be, wherein any work is done, it must be put into water, and it shall be unclean until the evening, so shall it be cleansed. So he told them if any of these dead, these animals weren't an abomination when they were alive, but he said once they're dead, some of them get bacteria grows in them really quickly. It's like a lot of the seafood that's eaten today is all unclean. People don't realize it, but like your little shrimps and stuff, if you look at them, they have that dark string in them. There's no way to take their intestinal tract out of them, so when you eat the little shrimp, you're actually eating all his manure, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's all in his little intestinal tract. And I understand there are some that are larger that they actually split open and whatnot, but the little ones, they're unable to. And that's why things like lobsters, they keep them alive till they're ready to eat them, because those things, they have so much bacteria and stuff in them that they begin to get very bad things growing in them very quickly after they're done. So that's why they want to put them in the boiling water and you eat them immediately, because if not, if they let them sit a few hours, you'd get deathly sick if you ate them. Now, once they boil them in water and then put them in refrigerator, you might be able to eat them a few hours later, but you have to be really careful with seafood. That's why they truck it in so fast and try to do all those things with it that they do. So he told them about touching their pots and pans, things like that. Verse 33, and he says, "And every earthen vessel whereinto any of them falleth, whatsoever in it shall be unclean, and ye shall break it." So he told them, if you have a little clay pot or something, and you find a dead mouse in there and he's been laying in there for a while, you just get rid of that one because he may have soaked into the clay pot. "Of all meat which may be eaten, that on which such water cometh shall be unclean, and all drink that may be drunk in every such vessel shall be unclean. And everything whereupon any part of their carcass falleth shall be unclean, whether it be an oven or ranges or pots. They shall be broken down, for they are unclean, and shall be unclean unto you." Now, he did tell them that if they had like a steel pan or something like that, they just had to wash it. They didn't have to destroy those. Verse 36, he says, "Nevertheless, a fountain or pit wherein there is plenty of water shall be clean, but that which toucheth their carcass shall be unclean." So he told them, like, if they were next to a spring or river and they found a dead animal there, they should take it out of the water, and the water right around it they should stay away from, but the rest of it was clean, and they could drink out of that if they needed to. "And if there any of their carcass fall upon any sowing seed which is to be sown, it shall be clean." So he told them, if you find a dead mouse in your bag of wheat and you're going to take it out and plant it, don't worry about that. But he told them they couldn't eat the wheat if the mouse was there. It needed to be sown or planted. 38, "But if any water be put upon the seed, and any part of their carcass fall thereon, it shall be unclean unto you. And if any beast of which ye may eat die, he that toucheth the carcass thereof shall be unclean until the even. And he that eateth of the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the even. He also that beareth the carcass of it shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening." So he told them they really shouldn't eat things that died on their own. And we kind of know that today. We don't really want anything. You know, if you have an animal that's hit by a car or something like that, it's different. But something that has something fatally wrong with it and lies down and dies, he told his people that they should not eat that. 41, "And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, and whatsoever goeth upon all four." Of course, the belly, he's talking about all types of snakes and things. You know, some people, actually rattlesnake and things like that are considered to be a delicacy by people that like to eat them. But God told them that the snakes and serpents, that type of thing, were all unclean to them, that they shouldn't eat them. 42, "Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, and whatsoever goeth upon all four, or whatsoever hath more feet upon all creeping things that creep upon the earth, them shall ye not eat, for they are an abomination." And when it talks about more feet, it's actually referring to things like millipedes and all that type of thing, which I doubt any of us would eat anyway, but he had to clarify it for them. Verse 43, "Ye shall not make yourselves abominable in any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall ye make yourselves unclean with them, that ye should be defiled thereby. For I, the Lord your God, I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore sanctify," that means keep yourselves pure and clean, "and ye shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall ye defile yourselves with any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that bringeth you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law of the beasts, and of the fowl, and of every living creature that moveth in the waters, and every creature that creepeth upon the earth, to make a difference between the unclean and the clean, and between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten. So he went through all this with them to tell them what he expected them to eat and what he expected them not to eat. And one of the other statutes, which we really won't get into tonight, was they were not to eat any blood, because God gave them the blood for their to be used in their sacrifices and offerings, and he told them that any animal that they would kill, they had to bleed it. And they were told to slice their jugular vein and let all the blood pump out of the animal prior to eating it. So they weren't to eat any blood in the animals which they were allowed to eat. So these laws that God had begun clear in the beginning with Noah. Like I say, long before there was ever a Jew, these laws were things that God had given the people, and he gave them to them to make them healthier. They've done tests on people, and there is no sin in eating meat. Don't think I'm saying that. I myself am a vegetarian, but there's nothing wrong with eating meat. The Bible says people can eat meat. God gave people certain meats to eat. It is a fact that people that are careful with what they eat, the government has studied them, and they find that they are healthier and that they live longer, you know. So it's a well-proven fact. So God wasn't trying to keep something from us. Instead, he was trying to keep us from being unhealthy, having bad things happen to us, and all those things. And we have to ask ourselves the question, how would Jesus dying on the cross make, say, for instance, the pig a clean animal? There's such an abstract thing. There's no tie-in between Jesus dying on the cross and making unclean animals clean animals. God gave these rules to be carried down forever. There's only one really good example of it, and I want to read that for you in Isaiah chapter 66. Isaiah is one of the major prophets of the Old Testament, and he gives us this rendition of the end of the world as he saw how it was going to end. Isaiah 66, beginning in verse 15, this was the end of his book. It's very interesting what he has to say. He says, verse 15, "For behold, the Lord will come with fire, and with his chariots, like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury, and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Lord shall be many." He's talking about the second coming, when God's coming. Then he says in verse 17, "They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens, eating swine's flesh," there's our pig, "and the abomination and the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith the Lord. For I know their works and their thoughts, and it shall come to pass that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory." So Isaiah told him that he was shown God coming at the end with chariots of fire and with the sword at the end for the final judgment. And he told them, he mentions these things, and I don't know why he did, but I'm glad he did, because it kind of silences the argument that is on the other side of the fence about whether these are clean or unclean. He says, "They that sanctify themselves," that means purify or try to get ready for his coming, "they that sanctify themselves and purify themselves, eating swine's flesh and the abomination and the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith the Lord." So Isaiah tells us that when the Lord breaks through the clouds, those who are eating the things that God said were abominations and doing these things are going to be consumed together. In other words, God is still the same as he was in the beginning. He gave us certain things that he told us to eat, certain things he told us not to eat, and he's never changed those things. And so a lot of the world wants to ignore all of God's rules that he's given us to live by, but we can see that he actually gave these for a purpose. And like I say, when you actually sit down and think about it, you know, people try to use different things, like there's the vision in the New Testament is the one they always try to quote you, but if you'll read the whole thing, you know, Peter was there at the house, and he was up on the roof, and the Jews had never preached to a Gentile before. They believed that the Gentiles were unclean, just like a pig. There was no difference to a Jew between what they considered to be a heathen and a pig. They were both unclean. In fact, they called them dogs. And they had never preached to them, and God was getting ready to send the gospel to the Gentiles. And so Peter was here at this house, and he was having a vision, and there was this big sheet, it says, came down out of the sky, and it had all kinds of snakes and all kinds of unclean things in it. And it says that the voice said to Peter, "Kill and eat, Peter." And Peter said, "I couldn't do that, Lord. They're unclean." And he had this dream several times here, this vision. And about that time, there was this banging on the door down at the bottom of the house where Peter was. And there was a man there who was asking him to go to a Gentile's home and preach to them. And that had never been done. And Peter was so shocked by it, he couldn't hardly stand to do it. But Peter says in that chapter that he realized that God was telling him that the Gentiles were not unclean anymore. And he went over to them and preached to them, and God poured out the Spirit on them, and they spoke in tongues just like the Jewish people did. And so God was showing him that the Gentiles were not any longer unclean, they were clean. But people try to take that verse today, even though Peter says right in there, he says, "I perceive that God was telling me that the Gentiles were not unclean any longer." And they try to take that verse and say, "Well, see there, God told Peter to eat all these unclean things, so today we can eat all these unclean things." So there's a lot of these arguments that are used out there, but if you'll actually go to the Bible and read what it really says about them, there was never anything like that said. They told the people, even in the New Testament, they told them that they were still to not eat anything, eat the blood of any animals. There was a big controversy in the church as to what was to be done with the Gentiles, because when all these Gentiles started coming in, they weren't sure what they should do for the Gentiles. And there was a big argument, and they were saying, well, the Gentiles have to be circumcised, they have to do all these things. And they said, we don't really know whether that's true or not. We need to decide what really needs to be done with the Gentiles. And so they told the Gentiles that what they needed to do was not eat the blood of any animals. So if this had really been like they were saying, why would they, or if it says it said today that God had done away with all these rules, why would they, many years after the death of Jesus, been telling the Gentiles that they still were not to eat any blood? The fact is, they knew, and as we really studied out to think about it, a lot of times we've just never really thought about these things because it's never come up. It's just been taught this way for a long time by some churches. There have always been churches that believe that you could not eat these things, but there's been many people who realized that you couldn't, but some believe that you could. But as you sit down and really think about it, you realize that it's not like that. In Acts chapter 15 and verse 19, he says, "Wherefore my sentence is," in other words, he was telling them, "that we trouble not them which from among the Gentiles are turned unto God." So he said, let's not trouble them, let's not put too much on these people. Verse 20, he said, "but that we write unto them that they abstain from pollutions of idols." In other words, he told them, we do have to tell them that they're not to worship idols. "And from fornication, and from things strangled, and from blood." They used to actually kill a lot of the animals. I don't really think there's much of that done in the United States anymore, but they used to strangle them rather than bleeding them, because that left all the blood in the flesh, and they had a lot more flavor. If you wanted to see a really red steak, just try one that instead of cutting the cow's jugular vein, they put a rope around its neck and choked it to death. There you have meat that is soaking in the blood. And so they told these people, this is many years after Jesus had died, they told them that they should stay away from things strangled and from blood. And then they said, "For Moses of old time hath in every city them that preach him, being read in the synagogues every Sabbath day. And then it pleased the apostles and elders in the whole church to send chosen men of their own country to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas." So they sent them off to preach to the Gentiles after they had written these things to the Gentiles to tell them not to eat blood, stay away from the idols, stay away from animals that were strangled. So We find these things actually coming up even in the New Testament. Now, there's a lot of, like I say, argument over these things today, but when you really take them and put the new with the old, it's clear that God made certain animals as clean-up creatures here on earth to help clean it up, keep it clean, make it smell better, make it look better. And then he made certain animals for us to eat. And you know, there's plenty of animals for us to eat. We're not short of things to eat. It's not like we don't have anything good to eat. And sometimes people say to me, but wow, that meat over there, that's the best tasting one or something. But when they tell me that, I have to think of the what happened to Adam and Eve. You remember when they ate of the tree God told them not to? It says after they ate of it, they saw that it was good for food. It was delicious. So they ate of the tree that God told them not to eat of. And after they ate of it, we know what happened. They disobeyed God and brought all this trouble on us that we have today. But it says that when they ate of that tree, they saw that it was good for food. In other words, it was delicious. Tasted wonderful. So sometimes, you know, just because something tastes good to us doesn't mean that it's good for us or that it's God's plan for us to eat those things. That's basically the end of what we could go. If you'd like to study some more on your own, I won't read it all to you because it's very similar, but the same rules are rewritten down in Deuteronomy chapter 14. So if you want to read that on your own, think about it some more. There's a few other things thrown in there, but it goes through those things again and talks to the people about them. They actually were to read these rules to the people very often, you know, not like every day, but it was done annually at the feasts and things, so that as the little children grew up, they heard the things that were said. And God gave them all kinds of rules. I mean, he gave them rules about their houses. If they had mold growing in their houses, that something had to be done about it. You know, they had to abandon the house, and the high priest came down and looked at it, and if they could kill the mold and get it out of there, that was fine. If they couldn't, they actually destroyed the house, you know. And we actually see that's happening in our society right now with the black mold we have, you know. If you are familiar with it, we know people that have had that in their house really bad, and the government comes and says, you've got to get out of this house, you know. And they come in and do tens of thousands of dollars worth of work there, you know, to clean it up and get it out of there because you can't live around that stuff. It's deadly to us, you know. And so we can go clear back here in the Bible and find all those rules that God gave clear back there in Moses' day to tell the people how they should live, what they should do. And he gave them to make us healthy. And as we look around our earth today and see all the pain and suffering and sickness that we have today, a lot of that is because God's rules have been forgotten and they've been overlooked. They've been lost sight of, and so we've actually done a lot of things to ourselves that are really harmful. You know, they actually, if you go to some of those other countries, there's a lot of countries where the people live to be 100 years old and they're really healthy right up to the time they die. Some of them 110 or so. And most of those countries don't have these animals we're talking about that are unclean. They're basically having to eat a vegetarian diet. They basically don't have any extra food. Our biggest problem today is overnutrition in the United States for all of us. And in those countries, the people are all thin because they have to work every day just to get enough food to eat, you know, so they never have the problems that we have over here. So as we look around, we can see that God gave these rules for a reason. And like I say, it's just a good idea to go home and ponder it and think about, you know, how the death of Jesus. We know when the new covenant came in and things changed, the killing of animals for sacrifices was over with. God didn't want us ever again to take a lamb and cut its throat and put our sins on that lamb, because if we did, we'd be saying that Jesus over here who came, he's not really good enough. We're still sacrificing our lamb looking for the Messiah to come. So there were certain things that were done away with, and they point that out and say, well, see here, the ordinances and things were done away with. Well, certain ordinances were done away with, but certain ordinances would not be done away with because they didn't have anything to do with the death of Jesus or the coming of the Messiah. So I encourage you just to give it some prayerful thought and think about it and, you know, read up on it. Don't take my word for it, but the Bible says that the Holy Spirit will lead us all into truth and help us understand these things and whatnot. And I encourage you to give it some thought and contemplation.